Do you know what the most requested item at homeless shelters all across the country is? It's socks. I didn't know that, and when I found that out, it made me sad. But it also made a lot of sense. At homeless shelters, new clothing is in extremely high demand. This fact is the driving force behind my friends at Bombas. Bombas exists to help support the homeless community and to bring awareness to an underpublicized problem in the United States. Bombas was founded on the philosophy of donating socks to those in need. But it's evolved to go deeper into the community. The more clothing items they sell, the more they donate. As they grow, their giving and community efforts will continue to grow right alongside them. Over 40 million acts of kindness. One purchase equals one donation. How many of us just go to a big box retail store and buy name brand socks without even second guessing it? Imagine if your purchase could support people in this country who need something as basic to us as a pair of warm, comfortable socks. Folks, do me a favor and go to bombas.com. That's BOMBAS.com. Head over and insert the code COMFORT at checkout to get 20% off your first pair of socks. Bombas covers all sizes, features great designs, including their upcoming holiday collection, and you'll be making a purchase that serves a basic human right and truly helps one of the greatest efforts in our country. That's bombas.com. BOMBAS.com. Welcome back to the show, Kurt Tuckfield and Shane Hunt, the Scary Stories tribute book. Welcome, gentlemen, both of you.
Hi.
How's it going, man?
Thank you guys for being here. It's going pretty good. As we begin tonight, I always like to sort of do this with every guest we have on the show. I like to get sort of a little housekeeping out of the way and tell everybody sort of about, you know, education, professional background. And Kurt, we'll begin with you tonight.
Education and professional background. Honestly, most of what I do, I kind of taught myself, and it's just because of being super obsessed with it. I don't have a professional background in writing or art or music or any of that stuff, but I've been doing it for like 20 plus years. So,
well, that's a good enough education in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I've always been. Like, I don't really fit in that well with a lot of mainstream systems of education. Maybe I would a lot more now, but
right.
Yeah, it's all just about an obsession and love of various geeky things that I get into, and I just have to do it.
Well, I can certainly understand that. Shane, how about you, sir?
Yeah, I come from a little bit of the opposite end of the spectrum, and Kurt and I, you know, we do so well together, I think, because we have these opposing kind of philosophies and stuff. But yeah, I have a bachelor's degree in fine arts from Brigham Young University in animation. Been drawing and painting, illustration, design, doing all that stuff professionally for 17, 18 years now.
Wow.
So I used to work at Disney Interactive making video games.
Nice.
For a while. I've done all sorts of book illustrations and covers and stuff like that. Yeah. So just a big history and or background in design and illustration primarily.
Yeah. No, I like that. I think it makes for a really interesting aspect when you're creating together, because self-taught experience is probably some of the most valuable experience you can have, I think. And then, you know, just coming from Shane, you know, like your background and sort of what you've done, I think it makes for a very good mix. And I think it shows off very nicely in the book, which of course we'll get into in just a few moments. Let's begin by having you guys talk about, you know, the first experience with these books. I know this is probably asked of you guys 1,000 times now, but Shane, do you remember the first time you saw them, read them? I mean, tell me about that.
Yeah, the elementary school library. It was just, you know, one of those things where you're just perusing the books on the shelves and you come across something that is so stark and so striking and you can't look away. And I had to check it out and became obsessed with it, told my parents about it, and they ended up buying all three of the original three books for me.
Yeah.
And I just devoured them until they were destroyed. I basically just read them until they were gone. And I should say, I didn't really read them as much as just looked at the art. Stephen Gammell's drawings, those are really what drew me to the whole thing.
Right.
I was never as interested in the stories themselves. I couldn't even remember more than, you know, a small handful of them.
Yeah, the art's so striking. I mean, it's such a striking thing. And I think that's so many people are visual. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kurt, what about you? What was your first experience with the books and with the writing?
Well, I wrote an introduction to this book that talks about that. And people have read it and they're like, that's exactly what happened to me. Like, they really relate to it because I think pretty much everyone had a similar experience. They were in probably first or second grade or something, and they went to the school library, and the teachers or the staff were maybe not so aware of what they had there. They, as time went on, they got banned more and more, but went to the school library and started seeing those, and just kind of next to everything else, they seemed really taboo and forbidden, even though somehow they were in our library. I don't know. I think it was like one of the first encounters I had with surrealism, which I think those books are very surreal. And just there's something very dreamlike and nightmarish that called me to them. And I started checking them out all the time. There was first just the first book. This was back in like probably 87. And then probably a year later, I saw the second book more show up on the shelf and I freaked out. And I kept checking them out until I got in like kind of banned for a while from checking them out because everyone else wanted them. And I always had those and like some old Guinness Book of World Records from like 1963, like the big fat ones in my backpack.
Great combo.
In sixth grade, I got a note from the librarian that said that you should come down and see this. And there was a third book. And the fact that there was suddenly more of that world and more of that texture, and then it ended, that's why we made this book, is we were like, what if that happened one more time?
Yeah.
It was very similar to, I think, what everyone else experienced. Scholastic book fairs or the school library is how people first saw those books.
Yeah. My mother bought me the three pack. Actually, there was like a box set for a while, if I remember correctly. And it had like box art on it and everything. And I that was my first experience with it. I remember reading it and it just scaring the living shit out of me just for the sake of reading, just consuming. And I have a really good sort of memory of that. I think that's probably something that, as you just mentioned, people have shared with you guys a ton since you guys have done this. So, you know, that's a great segue. I mean, let's discuss sort of how the project came to be. You touched on it. I mean, there's a wonderful, I love the trailer out there, the promo trailer on the website. It's very creative. You know, it sort of gives the fans like a snapshot of kind of why you wanted to do the book. But you just touched on it, but let's expand on it a little bit. I mean, let's talk about it from the beginning. I mean, how did this become a real possibility? And Kurt, why don't you start on that?
Well, I've always had a lot of very vivid dreams. Like, I would say that they're more than dreams, maybe like out of body experiences. It's like a constant thing my whole life. And years ago, I had one where I went to this library by my house, and I went to the bookshelves where those books were. And instead of three, there were four. I actually had two dreams. When one, there were four, and one, there were actually five of them. And I like grabbed this fourth book and started like looking through it and seeing all these images that I'd never seen before. And I did the same thing with the fifth book. And I was like, oh my God, there's like, I'm holding it in my hand, this thing that is kind of impossible it doesn't exist. And I realized that I was dreaming and that you couldn't possibly take it with you.
Yeah.
But then when Shane was, he started like right around the same time, he started just out of the blue drew a Stephen Gamble inspired piece of art. We just had this moment where, just like in the trailer, where we could just make it ourselves. Like, I could just tell you what I saw or give you images that are kind of coming into my mind, and you could draw it, and I could write stories, and we could just, that would be the only way, since you know Alvin Schwartz and Stephen Gamble are not really, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
One of them is gone and the other is kind of a recluse. So
yeah,
we just decided that that was the only way to do it. And just like in trailer, when we said, let's make one copy for each of us and that will be it. That was really what we were going to do.
Yeah.
Like it was only to have it for ourselves to put it on our shelves.
Yeah.
And then eventually we realized after it got going for a while, we're like, well, that would be dumb.
Yeah.
Like make a book, like spend years making a book and only print two copies.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. And then Shane, I mean, it seems like it started with a visual piece. I mean, it started with Kurt having sort of these, these ideas, these dreams, these visions, and then you kind of create this visual piece. I mean, do you remember that visual piece? Do you remember what the process was for you creating it and kind of just what made you decide to do that?
Well, yeah, it was a long, that would have been around 2012, maybe 2013 or something. This was my very first ever like attempt to emulate Gamel, and it just, you know, Gamel's art, it never really had a dominant influence on my actual drawing style, which tends to be a lot more comic, Calvin and Hobbes style, black and white ink brush kind of thing. But his art always kind of stayed in the back of my mind, like Josie Packard would say, like a haunting melody, you know, just it's always there and it never leaves. There was a time when Kurt was writing a story, or he'd written a story, and he asked me to do an illustration for it. And I drew a dog. I don't know if you remember that, Kurt. I drew one of these dogs for your story. And that was like the first time that I ever tried to do an emulation of Stephen Gamel. And then the problem with it, though, is that it was on Photoshop and it was all digital. And I didn't really understand what I was doing, and I had no direction. But then what happened was they announced the It remake, the new It film.
Oh yeah.
The Stephen King film. And I was so excited about that because I'm a big Stephen King fan, but I decided to try to draw It, you know, the clown monster in Stephen Gamel style. And I had just gotten the new iPad Pro, which had the app Procreate on it, which had all these amazing brushes that I was really excited about. And I just started experimenting with doing the digital emulation of Stephen Gamel's style, because I don't have a lot of experience with traditional tools like watercolors and ink washes and stuff. It's way outside my skill set, and so I had to do it digitally, at least at first. Amazingly, doing that kind of coincided perfectly with Kurt's dream and his vision of Scary Stories 4, which we call
It happened at like the same exact time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Without us really aware of it,
we were totally unaware of what each other was doing. And then we just saw that each other, we both had the same idea. And it just started small, started as just a few little handful of stories that we were going to do just for ourselves, and then grew into this beast. It took 4 years.
That sounds an awful lot like fate. And I think that's amazing. And, Kurt, you mentioned something earlier about, you know, and it's in the trailer and everything as well, but like talking about just making, you know, a couple copies just for you guys. And there's so much, you know, this is so much beyond like what fan fiction is and everything. But this, to me, there's so many people that are fans of different properties and different franchises, and, you know, they'll create some fan fiction. I mean, I've done it. I mean, there's a lot of people that will do it just for more for selfish reasons than anything else, because they just want to see an ending. They want to see a continuation, whatever the case is. And I think that, you know, that applies here. But I mean, was there like a moment where you thought, what it is, something kind of like a switch went off or something, and you just said, okay, we can actually, you know, this can be bigger than just, okay, us two. This can be, I think the fan base would really respond to this. I mean, there's got to be something there, I think, that would kind of switch for you guys.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, maybe like a year into the process or something. It started to come together where we started seeing the kind of images and the things that I saw in the dreams. And it was just clear that it was like, to us, was like a fourth Scary Stories book.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just like a little fun craftsy experiment. It was like this is like the book that this is like the only fourth book that's gonna be like basically that matches this as best as it possibly could. And at that point, we're just like, we're just two people who want this. There's like a lot of other people. We just knew that it would be stupid to, it would actually be like selfish to not like print more and just like let people, you know, have them or buy them. Like, it wasn't anything about trying to make money or anything. It's not like we make money doing this. It's really just all about, can we, you know, I love that experience. I loved that experience of when Scary Stories 3, when I first saw that book in the library after being a fan for, you know, since first grade, and having it like suddenly expand, this place that was like a dead end, suddenly it opens up and there's like a secret door to another place. We felt that other people would also love that, just like we would.
You talking about sort of, I guess, kind of segueing into sort of the research phase for the project. Obviously you had the original three that was obviously foundational for what you guys wanted to do. It kind of, it's took the inspiration from that. But other than the originals, was there anything else that you guys pulled from other than sort of you know, your personal experiences, perhaps? I mean, what did you do to prepare yourselves for the creation of the book? Was it just like, you know, brainstorming? Was there anything specific done for that?
Well, I have a thing where I just have like a vibe or an image that comes into my head.
Yeah.
And it could be like something from an old photo I saw once, something from my childhood, a certain place, but there'll be a texture. Like the first texture, Shane, we got to do an illustration for the story called, well, at the time it had a different name, but it's called Memento Mori. I think it was called the ossuary or something back then. I was like, Shane, look at these pictures of these dead bodies from this, there's this like catacomb, this vault in like Sicily, where all these monks and people are like just hanging on walls. It's like a cemetery, but it's an above ground cemetery. Everyone's just hanging there and mummifying.
Yeah.
And there's 8,000 bodies in there, and it's gotta be the creepiest, like most macabre place I could think of. This is the texture I want as a start. So we're just like looking at pictures of these dead bodies, which is really horrifying and fascinating at the same time.
Huh.
Hours on end. You're like, Shane, draw this, see this guy's face, draw that guy's face, put some of this guy's face in there.
Kurt, I'll interrupt really quick. If you could just see our Facebook messages chat history, you would be shocked and horrified at the images we've been sharing with each other over the years.
Oh,
it's pretty funny.
But yeah, there's a lot.
A lot of inspiration, I'm sure. A lot of interesting foundational inspiration there, I think, you know, to create that.
Yeah, it could be like even a picture of like Gigi Allen and his face is all beat up. I'm like, that's scary. That guy looks scary. Like just use that and turn that into a ghost or something.
Yeah.
Like it was always all over the place. Like there's textures all over the place that could be turned into something else.
It sort of begs the question, and you know, you guys are probably would know more, well, more about this than I would, but were you surprised that no one had ever attempted to take this on or to sort of do what you guys were going to do? I mean, this is, the legacy is so rich. I mean, it's primed for more, as we talked about a little bit tonight, but Kurt, were you surprised that no one had ever attempted to take this on?
Well, when we started, I didn't think anyone had, but it turns out that a number of people had in some degree.
Mm.
There are actually a number of books that are sort of tributes to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, but they're very influenced by Stephen Gammell.
Right.
And by those books. But none of them try to emulate it perfectly to where it's like a fourth Scary Stories book.
Yeah.
But we were surprised to find out that, yeah, there are actually other books that could kind of go for that, but not to that degree. But it doesn't surprise me that no one ever tried to do an exact replica, because doing just the art, there's so much to it that's so subtle.
Right.
There's so many subtle layers to it. People forget, oh, you got to get the same font. You got to have the same kind of paper, which we spent months on.
Yeah.
You got to have it formatted in a certain way with a certain number of lines and a certain tilt to the titles and a certain kind of title. And you don't use names that are modern. You use names that were all from the 20th century. You don't use anything from the 21st century.
Yeah.
And when you draw, you have to understand Gammell, which is a whole other universe.
Yeah.
It was just very difficult. So it doesn't surprise me that no one really tried to do it. But there's a number of other ones that are influenced by it.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of Gammell, Shane, I mean, you're taking a legacy of someone whose art is, I mean, in my opinion, since the art is legendary. I mean, especially with the influence and everything with our generation. I mean, now we have the recent film that sort of breathed new life into the visuals, you know, for people like, you know, kids like, you know, they're my son's age, around 9, 10 years old. Is that like a monumental like task for you? Do you see that as a fun challenge? I mean, what was that process like to converting sort of your style of art you talked about earlier into Gammell's, just at least, you know, Gammell's style, or at least the influencer? I mean, was that difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely want to make it clear that I don't feel like I've reached his level in any way. Mm-hmm. Like no one can even get close to what he can do, I don't think. But his artistic sensibilities are opposite of my own, which is weird to say since he's such a huge influence on me. And it's, you know, he was such a motivation for me to start drawing. But for some reason, my inclination is to go more toward the cartoony, super clear, you know, high clarity and lots of outlined forms, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I researched and studied the physics of light and shadow and anatomy and proportion and perspective and stuff. But Gammel's work, I mean, he's mastered all those things, and you can tell.
Yeah.
But somehow he's able to break all those rules and just ignore how light and shadow really work and do his own lights and do his own shadows and do his own anatomy and proportion perspective, to the point where it's so abstract and just dreamlike that it feels like you're peeking into another dimension almost.
Yeah.
And that is so outside of my standard approach to art that I really had to completely retrain my brain to do this. And, you know, Kurt has such a wonderful grasp and such a like profound, deep understanding of what makes the art Gammel-ish, you know, I guess for no better term, that he was super helpful in kind of being an art director, you could say, for the whole thing. And really the two of us going back and forth, well, what about this line here? You know, what about this shadow here? Is that working, or is that, you know, we just pour over all of the art from the original three books, looking for examples of how he handles drawing a wheel, or how he handles drawing a shoe, you know, or something like that. And hours, we're talking thousands of hours here, 4 years worth of work. So yeah, it was hard.
Yeah. I can imagine. And I know, Kurt, I'm sure you've heard this 1,000 times. I'll echo it here, of course, but you know, Alvin Schwartz, I mean, the writing, from what I remember when I was reading it as a kid, it had a very special, like, I don't know, like almost like a once in a lifetime feel to it. I mean, there really isn't anything like Schwartz's writing, like in the Scary Stories books, and just kind of like just the way they make you feel. For your process, what do you do to try to capture that same feeling, but at the same time take it in a new direction for like a modern audience?
I grew up reading those books, and so the style is very ingrained in me.
Yeah.
And to me, his style is very overly simplified. It's like a second or third grade level of reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's simplified for kids, but the subject matter is beyond that. That's why they're so controversial. And then you have the Gammel illustration right next to it, and then a really fast spook, like creepy ending, and all of that comes together to make it very weird, very surreal and creepy. The writing, what I did was I wrote it like he would write it. I kind of know how to do that just because I could just hear how he would write it.
Yeah.
Like from reading those my whole life.
Yeah.
But I did push it up a bit. Other people that have done books like this, they just completely disregarded that.
Yeah.
They put like modern references and like huge, like a ton of synonyms and flowery writing and sex and swearing. And it's not really that style at all.
Yeah.
So I kept it simple. Some of his writing is like, it's like you almost had to make some of it purposely clunky, because that's what makes it weird.
Yeah.
There's an aspect to that where it's the simple kind of, there's an awkwardness to it. That's a bit, it gives it like an uneasy kind of nightmarish feeling.
Mm.
So I kept that, but I pushed it a bit to be a little bit longer and a little bit more flowery, but not much, because the main audience isn't really second and third graders. It's people who were second and third graders, but are now probably like in their mid 30s.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't write any stories that were like 20 pages, 30 pages. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be right for this. That I didn't write too many stories that were only like two paragraphs either, which some of his were. I did a few that were really short, but I tried to bridge both worlds.
Yeah.
And it got interesting in editing and in working, trying to finesse it, because I was constantly fighting to keep it in this weird Schwartz style, but that's not like necessarily the way you would be expected to write, or it would be the way that you should write.
Yeah.
But it's the way that worked for this tribute, because it is a tribute to Alvin Schwartz and Stephen Gammel. And I think it worked out. I think some people don't really, they might've read it and not really understood that.
Yeah.
Virtually all the feedback we get is super positive. Like people are like, I opened the book and I was crying and you took me back. But there have been a few people that are like, what's with the, like, why is this so simple? Or they don't really understand that it's Schwartz.
Yeah.
Even though his books are even simpler.
Yeah.
It was an interesting process, and the whole time I was very aware of what I was trying to go for with sports.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good segue into sort of something I always, every time we have, you know, authors, creators on the show, and we talk with them about kind of their work and what they're doing, I always like to talk about this next topic, which is sort of the idea of, we talked a lot about creation tonight and kind of coming up with this, these stories and this tribute. Obviously, in that process, I mean, it doesn't, as you guys talked about, 4 years of work, you don't just knock it out real quick. I mean, this is something that takes a lot of, you know, there's a lot of tries. There's probably a lot of ideas that you sort of threw at the wall that maybe didn't work out. I want to see if you can maybe talk to some of the younger people that are going to be listening to this and talk about sort of, you know, creating something, drawing something that just doesn't work, or writing something that just doesn't work, and kind of coming back from that and working through that process and working through sort of, I mean, even sometimes some authors refer to it as just, you know, the anxiety of writing or the anxiety of creation. Can you guys talk about that process? I mean, kind of what made you decide to just, you know, keep going? This is bigger than just, you know, a failed idea or something we don't feel is good enough. And we can ask, we can talk with, you know, Shane, if you want to go first on that.
I think it's important to have some kind of success early on in any kind of project you have.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a glimmer, you know, mm-hmm. that gives you a sense that something might work here. Ira Glass talks about this idea where if you don't like your own work, it's because you have good taste. And it's, you have good taste, and that good taste is informing your art and telling you that it's not good enough. And, you know, you can be encouraged by that. And so whenever Kurt and I came across a piece of art that wasn't working, or a piece of the writing that we weren't loving, I think we were excited about that because it reinforced our belief and our faith in ourselves and in the project.
Yeah.
Because if we know it's not working, then that means we'll know when it is working. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Good point.
And so all we had to do was have faith and move forward and step into that darkness and just hope it would work out. And we knew it would, because like I said, we'd had that glimmer early on in the project where I had done that clown drawing that I felt was pretty close, you know, to what we're going to want eventually.
Yeah.
Even though that one I got lucky maybe with dozens of times, hundreds of times, I'll say, maybe thousands of times since then, I hated what I was drawing and felt like it wasn't even close to what it should be. And wanted to give up on so many of these pieces, but just putting putting our nose to the grindstone. Is that what the
That's right.
Phrase is, and just pushing forward and absolutely dedicated to finishing this thing, no matter how long it took.
Yeah.
That's what it took.
Kurt, anything you want to add to that?
Well, the good thing about writing, especially on a computer, is that if you don't like something, you can change it really pretty quickly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mediums, like, you know, my mom will do pottery and she'll spend all this time on something and it will come out all wonky and then it will crack and break. Mm. Like most of it doesn't do that. But in that medium, if it gets messed up, you have to start over from scratch and you have to learn not to do that again. But with writing, it's really great that you can, how fast you can change something or like delete or move something around. Hmm. With the art that Shane did, he didn't, unlike Gamble, he didn't start with graphite and watercolor and, you know, I don't know who else could possibly do that and just pull it off. Having that Procreate program where you could make a layer and you're like, I don't like that, undo.
Yep.
The technology, like the technology of a computer and the technology of like Procreate and the digital pen.
Yeah.
That, for as time goes on, you know, with the younger people, that's going to help a lot. But to me, it's all about, instead of starting with an idea, start out with an emotion or a place or some nostalgic feeling that you want to go back and explore. And once you really get in the zone and really get fixated on that emotionally.
Yeah.
Then you're kind of casting your fishing lure out into the ocean and you'll catch these ideas that already existed, but were never formed. They're unformed. And if you try to force it, then it will suck. So my recommendation to anybody is to just to get really emotional, think back to some place that you'd want to go again and just like kind of holographically put yourself there. Like I just wrote a few more stories about like my old elementary school where I first saw these books, and I just walk through there kind of in my mind, and then the story starts to form, your fingers start to move, and it starts to happen.
Yeah,
honestly, if you're trying to write the story, it will suck. You need to let the story write itself. Like, the ideas come through you, not from you. Like you give birth to them rather than create them, in a sense. That's how all the best stuff came.
I think people that are listening to this, especially our younger audience, those are two very powerful answers. So thank you guys for chipping in on those. I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the book is, it seems like it's been a really rousing success. I mean, I've read countless reviews sort of in prep for the conversation tonight. You guys touched on people opening the book and just, you know, sort of weeping at the book and being taken back to, I mean, that's gotta be pretty powerful. What's the reception been like? Let's talk a little bit more about that. I mean, Kurt, is there a certain amount of like vindication there from, like, you know, this original idea that you had and kind of seeing it all the way through the end and then now getting this very warm, powerful reception you guys have gotten?
Well, I mean, I've done stuff like this my whole life, and I'll spend like years with my friends making like what we consider to be like a brilliant album with all these amazing ideas, and the market's so oversaturated, and it's not really about us showing it to people. It's all for ourselves. And we sell about 7 copies.
Yeah.
And we don't really hear anything about it. So that's what we were used to for our whole lives, is just making art for ourselves.
Yeah.
When we started hearing the responses from this one and having it be like, oh, this is, you gave these people what you wanted to have experience for yourself. We actually never got to experience this as a fourth book because we spent so much time slowly making it that by the time it was done, we were like, it was like gibberish because we had gone over it a million times. But they got to experience it for the first time, just all new.
Yeah.
And there's been so many people who have reached out to us saying, you know, how much they loved it and how it brought them back, that at this point it's kind of surreal. I don't even know, you know, how to feel about it, 'cause there's so much. I feel great about it, but I realize that it's more than what I can really process or see, 'cause there's so much of it going on.
Yeah.
And it's all over the internet rather than in person. So
sure.
when you talk to someone, it's usually just through text. So there's kind of a disconnect.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Shane, anything you want to add to that as far as kind of what the reception's been like for you on your end?
For whatever reason, art and writing differ in how people perceive them and how people consume it.
Mm.
I find that people are a lot more forgiving of art than they are of writing. Would you agree with that, Kurt?
Yeah, the art is much more, it happens way faster, and it's not
right.
It's not as much about ideas. It's like the difference between really weird music and a really weird painting. Like, one is much easier to absorb than the other.
Yeah.
The other one is, I think writing is much more personal and much more based on different people's perspective.
Yeah.
There have been a few people who had different perspectives on it.
In general, it's been almost universal praise and adulation for my art, which is great. And I'm happy about that. But early on in the project, and we say this in on our website, we just decided early on that if this book doesn't feel to us like an authentic Scary Stories experience, then it's not going to feel that way to anyone else either.
Yeah.
And we just realized that we have to do everything we can to make it feel that way. And so every single drawing I made for this book, I didn't stop until I genuinely felt some kind of fear from my own drawing.
Yeah.
I'd get goosebumps, you know, until I got goosebumps, basically, I wouldn't stop because it wouldn't be right yet. And so just the positive reaction we've gotten has absolutely been exciting for me. And even, you know, I should say early on in the project, we contacted Alvin's son, Peter Schwartz. And we told him all about the book and all about the project, because we wanted to do this, you know, as legitly as possible.
Right.
And he was super supportive and cool about everything, and just kind of said, you know, if this is a independent little passion project, just go ahead and do it. Who cares?
Wow. So, yeah.
We did it and sent it to him, and he was super supportive, and he loved the book. He thought it was great. And that means more to me than anything else personally.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How Kurt feels, but getting that response from him. Now, if we could just get a copy to Steven, Oh, man.
Yeah.
If he's out there, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe he's listening.
Maybe I doubt it.
Yeah, you never know. Well, I, you know, this has been great. And tonight, you know, let's end on a question that I think everyone who's read the book already and are fans of the franchise wants to know. Are there perhaps a few more scary stories to tell, Kurt?
Well, actually, I did write like probably like 7 or 8 more stories this month. Hmm. We were talking about doing like an expanded edition in the future. People keep asking us. I'm getting asked a lot, when are you going to make a sequel? When are you going to make another book? When are you going to make another book?
Yeah.
You got to make another book. And I'm like, I don't think we can. Like, it's too hard and Shane's too busy and you can't force that arc, especially. You got to be like really in love with the process to do it, or else it's going to start to suck.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that in the future we will come out with just like an expanded edition or a smaller book, probably an expanded edition with another chapter or two and new art and just some new stories. Or you could just get maybe like a PDF or a Kindle of just the new stories.
Yeah.
But yeah, either way, there are some new stories that are really great that just had to come out. So for me, it's I can't write, I can't make anything new until some time has passed. It's like a fuel that it has to regrow and build up and then it comes out.
Yeah.
If you start like forcing it when it's not there, it will start to suck. And I never want to do that kind of thing where you're just forcing it.
That's very exciting news though, for a potential for more. So that's really great. Before we head out tonight, I want to end on what has become something of a tradition here on the show. Now, this is of course, you know, the questionnaire invented by French television host Bernard Pivot and made famous here in the US by James Lipton of Inside the Actors Studio. Now there are 10 questions, and Kurt will start with you. Kurt, what is your favorite word?
Okay, so I don't have a favorite word. I have a number of favorite words. The kind of person I am, I have to have more than one of certain things. Like there's so many amazing words.
Oh yeah, agreed.
I could say purple is a great word. I could say regal or foyer is a great word, or staircase or attic or something. But yeah. It's in the end, I would have to give you a list of like 1,000 words.
Yeah.
So that one, I don't have a single favorite word.
Well, spoken like a true writer for sure.
How can I write with just one word?
That's very true. Although purple, I am a fan of purple, the color and the word.
That's a good one.
That's
a good one. Right?
It is. Shane, what about you, sir?
The word my kids hear me say most often, and I know it's weird, but it's monkey.
Hmm.
I incorporate monkey into everything. Monkey cheese, monkey Bilbo Baggins,
yeah.
Monkey sausage. I don't know. Do monkeys want to monkey around? Right? I don't know. It's just something I say to my kids a lot.
I like it.
It's funny that you bring that up because I actually say ape like 100 times a day because Shane and I are both just a tad bit autistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have a little, our little words. So actually, honestly, right now, ape is my favorite word, which is funny because he's saying monkey.
Yeah, that is funny.
I don't know what it is. There's something silly about it. But it will change next month to something completely different and bizarre.
You guys know each other well. Okay, well, let's flip to the opposite of that. Kurt, this, you know, it might be the same, but what is your least favorite word?
Probably poop.
Yeah. Wow, that's
poopy.
Yeah,
poopy.
That's a good pick.
I don't like that. I think it's gross and stupid.
Yeah, I agree. Shane, how about you?
I don't like the word Wednesday because it's spelled stupid and pronounced stupidly.
You know, you make a good point. It's always been the most difficult to spell of all of them.
It's so stupid. I was going to
stop for a second. Makes a lot
of
sense.
Just get rid of it.
All right, moving on. Kurt, what turns you on? Good conversation, you know, smart people, funny people. What gets you going?
Honestly, just really passionate people.
Mm.
People that are passionate and will have a conversation. And if you ask them what they're into, they'll ask you what you're into and you have a conversation rather than them just being like silent and lifeless.
Yeah.
I like passion and intellect and willpower and people that are unique and creative and impressive in like art or philosophy or their acts,
yeah,
of giving or whatever.
Now that makes a lot of sense. Shane, what about you?
I'd say confidence.
Yeah.
So when a person loves herself,
mm-hmm,
and is confident, that's my number one, probably.
That's a big one too. What about the opposite, Kurt? What turns you off?
Stupidity, ignorance.
Yeah.
Any kind of like prejudice, racism.
Yeah.
And people that are not passionate and are boring, like I'll meet people my age and I'll be like, what's your favorite band? They're like, oh, I don't really like music.
Yeah.
And I'll be talking about like stuff from our childhood. Like, oh, I remember that episode of The Simpsons, like remember Treehouse of Horror 4?
Oh yeah.
Like, oh, I never watched that show growing up. It seemed boring.
Yeah. It's like talking to a wall.
It's like, hey, you want to go on this roller coaster? No.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point?
That makes a lot of sense. Shane, what about you?
Unkindness.
Yeah, that's a big one.
If you're rude or unkind in any way, like I'm done instantly with you. No more of that. Yeah,
that's a big one. That's one that we could all learn a lesson from right now. All right. Well, Kurt, what sound or noise do you love?
Any of the Bobby Prince made sound effects for Doom would probably top my list.
Yeah, those are good ones. What about you, Shane?
Number one, thunder and rain sounds.
Ooh, that's a great one.
I have these apps on my computer and on my phone. I'm a total pluviophile.
Yeah, me too.
I can't get over it.
Yeah.
I just can't get over it. So I just have thunder and rain sounds in my ears constantly.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Yeah. No, those are good. That's actually one of the most popular answers is thunder and rain. Those are big ones.
This whole like last year, it hasn't really rained at all here in Utah. I've just been like, where's the rain? What's it gonna rain? What the hell?
It's pissing me off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like really like pissed off.
Yeah.
Where's the thunder and lightning?
Yeah, well, out here and you know, I live in Missouri, so it's legendary downpours and just thunder and lightning that just rattles. It'll rattle the house in the middle of the night. And it's so awesome. It's amazing.
I know. Oh.
Love it. It's really fantastic.
Now we're all jealous.
I'm jealous. Yeah.
It's really fantastic. Those summer rains, like the downpours are really beautiful. And it's just like, man, you can, of course it's, you know, it's pouring down rain and it's like 120 out in the middle of the summer. So that the humidity is really bad. So it's like the worst of all weather, but it sounds amazing. You know, if you're in the house and the air conditioning, you're good. So
it has its pros and cons.
It does.
Tornadoes, not so great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, everything's got its pros and cons. You're exactly right. What about the opposites? What sound or noise do you hate? Kurt, we'll start with you for that.
Like a flexible rake on concrete or any kind of like,
it's very unique.
There's a few like sounds that just feel like my teeth are being pulled out.
Yeah.
Oh, that one, I even thinking about it makes me break out into like welts.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Wow. That's very, very, very specific. And now I'm going to be listening out for that. I think around here now.
Well, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, no, I can actually picture it. And I'm sure I've heard it a million times. So now I'm going to really listen out for that. See if it's as bad as you say. Yeah. Well, what about you, Shane? What sound or noise do you hate?
Horse sounds.
Yeah, really?
Seriously?
Every sound that a horse makes, disgusting and vile and evil. Oh, I hate those sounds.
Wow.
Just the neighing and the weird like, thing. Just shut up, you stupid horse.
I like those. I think they're weird.
I don't like horses. They scare me a little bit, actually.
That's interesting. Interesting revelations tonight, I think. Well, okay. So this next one is everybody's favorite. Kurt, what is your favorite curse word?
In writing, when I don't write this kind of style, I'll say like fuck and shit. If I'll use that to like amplify certain emotions. And if I get mad, I'll say it. No problem saying it.
Yeah.
But honestly. Most of what we say is gosh and dang.
Yeah.
Because we grew up in Utah in the 80s and 90s in this very LDS Mormon reality.
Sure.
We were growing up, you didn't swear.
Yeah.
Like we didn't hear like anyone say that stuff really until we were 17, 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
Like it was, so we'll be like, dang it. Like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
Like it's just
very Napoleon Dynamite.
Maybe it's those words.
Yeah.
Because we're just, that's, I think, just like the product of where we came from.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Shane, what about you? Does that reflect for you too?
That does. But if you really need to know my favorite curse word, I think I think the funniest curse that exists is son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Because it can be used perfectly in timing and in comedy to, I think it's the funniest. Son of a bitch.
That's a good one. It is a good one. It is a good one. And you can get a lot of feeling out with it too when you say it. So
yeah, exactly.
It's like a ramp up to the bad word. All right. Kurt, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, I might like to work in a shop or a haberdashery or chapeau shop. Dude, I'm thinking about that one bad. It's got to be one of the other things I already kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
If I really had like the ability to do it or like the resources to do it, it might be like filmmaker.
Yeah.
filmmaker would be awesome, but I tell you, it's probably a lot easier to sit down and type something out than it is to make a film.
Yeah.
Because that's just like, when I see like films that I really respect, it's just like, well, how are you going to do that?
Yeah.
You'd have to have like a million people working on it.
Yeah.
Originally, like when I was a kid, I was way into Build, which is like the program that you use to make levels for.
Oh, yeah.
Shadow Warrior, like Blood and Duke Nukem 3D. And I was really good at it. And I wanted to be a video game level designer.
Mm-hmm.
My teachers, they were like, that's not real. Like, you have to choose something else. And like another student said football player or astronaut. And they were like, good job. And then like the next year it was this multi-billion-dollar industry.
Right. You're right.
So it might have something to do with video games or film.
Oh, how the wheels have turned for sure. Yeah, exactly. It's pretty interesting. Yeah. Shane, what about you?
I was thinking it would be cool to be like, maybe like a fisherman on some little boat on some island or something, like catch fish early every morning for the local village or something like that.
Very noble profession. I think that would be a lot of fun. I've actually thought about doing that too. Just fishing in general. How fun would this be to do this for like a profession?
It's so opposite of everything I like, I think, but I might be able to find something I like about it. I want to try it.
I agree. I like the whole maritime thing.
Yeah.
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 A lot of fun. Yeah. On the water. What about the opposite? Kurt, what profession other than your own would you absolutely not want to attempt?
Anything working at a call center or any kind of thing where you're just doing the same thing over and over again and you're just a cog in a machine.
Repetition.
Yeah, just there's some jobs that are, I'd say most jobs to me are like nightmares, or anything where you're trying to sell people, hard sell people into things that you don't believe in yourself.
Oh yeah.
Trying to sell people, I don't know like what it is, like timeshares or
pyramid schemes.
Yeah, like a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
That would be a nightmare to me. I'd flip out, I'd walk out. There's no way.
Yeah.
But call centers are like the one of the, you know, levels of hell to me. I like call centers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Shane, what about you?
I was thinking anything in the military would probably just be impossible for me. I don't think I could, not because I don't, you know, want to try to help if there's a serious need or anything like that, but just because the idea of like the small cog and the super authoritarian kind of rigid thing. Yeah.
And what they have to go through just being away from their family, their spouses, their kids for God knows how long.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know how they do that. All right. Well, the very final question tonight before we get out of here, probably the most poignant of all. Kurt, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I could come up with something like really clever or something, but really it would just be like, you're home. Congratulations. It's over.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be like happy forever now. You did a good job. Move on from here and like go into higher and higher realms of reality and help people from here more than you ever did before.
Yeah. Wow.
So basically something like that.
Yeah. That's pretty powerful. Shane, how about you?
I thought about giving a funny answer or something, but I think I have to give the truth, which is my mom passed away when I was 6 of breast cancer. And so I guess I would hope that he would, or God would say, hey, your mom's over there. Go say hi, you know, something like that.
Wow. Well, on that note, gentlemen, please plug the website. Where can people pick up the Scary Stories tribute? Where can they follow you guys online? Let's plug all that before we get out of here tonight.
Kurt, go ahead.
It's at scarystoriestribute.com. You can get a physical copy there, a PDF. We also have a really great audio book done by AJ Dana, and you can get a Kindle version now on Amazon.
Nice.
You can get prints on our website. There's a few other things, but yeah, I think that's about it. And who knows what the future is going to hold for any kind of expansions or something, but scarystoriestribute.com is the place to go.
Well, this has been an absolute blast tonight. I mean, I really was looking forward to this for a while, and you guys didn't disappoint. So thank you so much to the both of you for what you've done. I think you've done something very special for people like myself and like everybody all over the world that was a fan of these stories growing up. And I think you've given them sort of an addition, a really worthy addition to that legacy. And I thank you both. And I thank you both for your time tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Griff.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun.
If you made it all the way through our conversation tonight, I want to thank you for hanging out with me and my friends.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media as we post each new conversation as they air. News, show information, and more. Go to facebook.com/meandmyfriendspod. On Twitter, you can search the handle meandmyfriendspod. And on Instagram, search the handle @meandmyfriendspod. If you've enjoyed our conversation tonight, please do me a favor and head to iTunes and rate us and leave us a review. As a brand new podcast, we need all the help we can get, and your time is appreciated. Me and My Friends is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson. Tonight, the podcast featured the original song Paranoia by producer Redeman. The opinions on Me and My Friends are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films, Inc. Chris Evan Films, Inc. is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. Any audio clips used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of education and entertainment, and no infringement is ever intended. Me and My Friends is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films, Inc. and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films, Inc. All rights reserved. Me and My Friends is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved.